This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
What are you calling us, all old?
And Karina Anglada.
We're going to roll it back.
Welcome back to the Sports Creative Podcast. We are thrilled to be celebrating Women's History Month, and we have an exciting conversation with Janice Hoagland, EBS operator with Warner Brothers Discovery. Y'all, this conversation was so insightful, transparent, and real, and we covered so much, like what it's like to work as a replay operator covering some of the largest events in sports, and how to take care of your well-being and be assertive in really stressful times. This is an episode you don't want to miss, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the pod. Hey, Darian.
Hi, how's everyone? 04? I was spot on.
It's always off every time.
No, that was actually pretty solid.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller FX, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today.
We are so excited today to welcome Janice Hoagland, EBS operator with a Warner Brothers Discovery, doing incredible work with Turner Sports and TNT. Janice, welcome to the pod.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
We're thrilled. And I'm excited because Janice and I met back in Auburn, where you were a student while you were there. War Eagle, of course.
War Eagle. Well,
give us, for those who don't know you, give us a little sneak peek into how your journey into working in the sports creative industry began.
So I grew up in Riverdale, so Clayton County in Georgia. I always wanted to be in television and work behind the scenes. But for some reason, every time when I tried to get a class in high school, they never scheduled me for like the TV stuff. But I did like small things like the announcements on the intercom, or we had like a TV announcements at the beginning when I was in middle school. So coming into college, I actually majored as a vocal major in high school. So I went to a performing arts high school. And so I didn't even think that I was going to be in television at all. I actually went to school for theater because I thought that's what I was going to be doing for the rest of my life. Eventually, I realized that theater was not my go-to. So they ended up having like a seminar for Warrior Productions come up. And I was like, you know what? That sounds like something I'm interested in. Let me check it out. And so I ended up registering for a few classes and didn't realize that the entire field of television is basically like kind of what we started to do. So I got the opportunity to learn editing skills, but at the same time, start working in the field as different operators. So I was a grip one time, and then I became a camera operator. And then magically, I just got thrown on a shift to be a replay operator. And I was like stressed. I didn't even know what a box looked like. I was like, you're wanting me to do what? This is stressful. But I did a pretty great job. And so my boss was like, you know what? Keep doing it. We're going to keep putting you on these things. So from then on, I think I did replay for probably like 2 years afterwards. And then I ended up staying an extra year after I graduated because I wanted to intern. And also, I don't know, in college, you think that, oh, I love this. This would be like what I'm going to do for life instead of like getting to the next step. But my boss was like, no, I'm not hiring you full time because you're supposed to be in other places. You're not meant to be here for life. So I was like, dang, that sucks. Love it here. Love y'all. But while we were doing games, a lot of directors and producers from ESPN would come down and teach us things, and we would do games with them and build relationships. Eventually, during my internship year, I would also build content and edit as well. So I was doing that, basically working a 9-to-5 and doing games at the same time. And I got some advice from Scott Hecht, who told me, at the time he was like in charge of the ACC network. He told me to apply to the internship for ESPN. And I was just like, well, I already graduated. I'm kind of a year out. Do you think I'll still make it? And he was like, just do it anyways. So I applied and got through all the way to the end, but I was overqualified. But eventually, someone decided to send my resume to production at ESPN. And so I ended up getting a meeting with Mo McMeekin, who is one of the supervisors there. And we had a couple of conversations about Dreamcatcher because ESPN at the time was just entering into the Dreamcatcher world and using that software. And so I just told him how we were using it at Auburn and how we did with our games and what was happening and even the server space. We started talking about that. And so eventually he was just like, you know, that sounds really interesting. We should have another conversation. And so I was like, okay, cool. So at a later date, we had another conversation about how we used it. And then he gave me the hint of saying, hey, just be on the lookout. We're dropping applications. So if you do want a job, you know, let me know. And I was just like, ah, okay. You got to tell me twice.
Wait a minute. So let me rewind a little bit. So that conversation, the conversations you had were more about your experience with Dreamcatcher, less about you were interviewing for a specific role. Like you guys were purely just talking about business things. Okay, got it. And then
he was like, oh, be on the lookout. And I was like, okay. Meanwhile, the first conversation, I think I was in a changing room at Target. And then the second conversation, I was visiting my boyfriend at the time of Hawaii. So we were on a totally different time zone as well. So I was just like, I don't know what's going on, but you know, sure, we can have this conversation. This sounds great. I feel like things are happening and moving. And so I applied and eventually, I don't even think I went through the first interview process of what they would traditionally go through. I think I went all the way to just to the second level where they start sending people up because I had already had those conversations with Mo. And so I went up to Bristol, had an interview, and it was really great. Had a campus tour, all of that. And honestly, I didn't think I was going to get it. I thought that they didn't really like me. I felt like it was way too corporate. And I was just like, well, I'm just a college student. I don't know what I'm doing. So you know what? Cool, whatever. And in my head, I felt like I wasn't going to get it. But then at the same time, I was just like, it's either here or nothing. It's either this or nothing. To the point where I had already finished my internship. I think it ended up quitting WEP, and I was also working at the movie, so I was just doing a lot, just trying.
WEP as in War Eagle Productions.
Yes, WEP, War Eagle Productions. Ended up quitting there, and I was already packing up my stuff. I ended up ending my lease and everything. I was just about to move back home and figure it out. And the last trip of me sending, like driving back home with all of my stuff, I got the phone call from Mo telling me that I got the job. So luckily, everything was already packed up. I didn't have to worry about anything. But when he called me, I had just got off the phone arguing with the guy who I was dating at the time. And it was like, hold on. And I was just like, hey. And he was like, you got it. And I was like, oh, my God. I will say, I wish back then I knew how to negotiate my salary, because my starting salary, I think, was like $49,000, which is nothing in Connecticut. But for me, as a college student, I didn't know any of that. So I was just like, sure, whatever. But that's basically how I got my step in the door at ESPN.
Yeah, so 49 is probably more than all of us 100%. Started out.
I was just going to say, wow, that sounds really
high.
Mine was
half of that.
Okay, but also
years later.
Yeah, years difference. Yeah. Let's start there.
What are you calling us, all old?
We are.
But
we are aging.
10 years, 49,000 in what, 2017?
Yeah. I mean, but you bring up a good point that so many people, I did the exact same thing in my career. I did not negotiate my first job.
There was no negotiation.
Yeah, like I think I lied. I think I did negotiate. You said you tried?
I tried. I was like, hey, can I get like 51,000? And he was like, why? And I was just like, you're right, why?
Wait, what did you respond? Well, you didn't respond. What did you actually respond? Like,
I was just like, well, based off the cost of living, I think that I deserve a little bit more than that. And he was just like, well, you don't have a family and kids, so I think you should be fine.
Yeah. So let's also put into context, $2,000, wow. Mm-hmm. Spread out over 12 months taxed, is like $50 more a month.
I mean, there's a couple issues at play.
There are.
First of all,
but
I think
but
if
like,
you want to
have $2,000 a month. My point is, it's like.
That's a lunch out.
That is a lunch out.
Or dinner.
When we start talking about negotiating, $1,000 or $2,000 is like, we got to ask for more. So it's an art that none of us have really figured out of like in that negotiation, but like for a yearly salary, $1,000 or $2,000, like they're probably like, that's why it hit you with like, well, why? Like, cause yeah. it wasn't going to make a difference. One thing I want to
getting those promotions with percentages attached to them. Then
absolutely 0% of zero is or 0% of nothing is, you know, nothing.
Nothing.
So I want to rewind a little bit, pun intended, for those who are not sure what it is. Explain to us what an EVS operator is.
Okay, so EVS and also Dreamcatcher, because they basically do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is a person who has a box that allows you to be able to roll things forward and roll things backwards. It allows you to make it faster and slower and give you the control of whatever source you have to roll it slower, faster, or even queue up clips made by the box to be able to roll content.
Right. The replay systems watching a broadcast on television. Yeah. Or any type of production, live show, that yep. kind of thing.
So like when you're seeing packages and B-rolls from like, say, for instance, we're talking about the Lakers. If they're talking about LeBron James and they have like a package of 3 or 4 shots of him scoring, mm-hmm. that's something that I'm rolling back because somebody else ended up clipping during edit. But we're playing it back for you guys to see.
Yep.
Or like if, right, cameras are capturing content, pregame warmups of the players, then you might have a moment, or maybe LeBron goes to talk to somebody like, Stephen A. Smith or something about something. And then that becomes part of the broadcast story.
Why'd that cross your mind?
I don't know.
She's messy.
You can use it for studio shows, and then you can also use it for live events.
Absolutely.
So the clips that I'm talking about are more, mainly for studio shows, but what Karina's talking about is more live events. So if I was doing a game, I would come in, I'll be clipping off warmups, anything that I see pregame, any color shots of fans, all of that stuff that we could possibly use for playlists later on for like rollouts to break or just like billboards or anything like that. In game, my job is to clip every single play that happens. Sometimes fouls are not important, but depending on who the person is, it's important. But we're clipping every play of the game, and also each chair has its different responsibilities. So you have the person who's like the main person who does packaging, which is basically, like I said, creating those in-game highlights for you guys to see on air. Then you have somebody who will roll scenics or any other like color for production. And then you have another person who is making the rollouts, which will send them color fans. They can choose what shots they think are great throughout the game, depending on the different camera angles, to like kind of make a summary of what's happening in the game towards the end.
Yep. So in TV terms, the TV melt, which is, you know, four mm-hmm. or five, some depending on the level of broadcast, you may have 6 or 7 angles of the same play that you can use in different things. And also, EVS is one of the first times that I've ever heard, like, been around something where they added letters to call something. So a lot of people would refer to the EVS system as Elvis, and I'm like, Well, yeah. Why are they adding letters to something instead of abbreviating? But
Elvis is such an old term. Like all the old road guys call it Elvis.
Well, and I will say, old also, here, Janice.
Well, no, not you guys. I'm talking about like the 60s. Like I have people that I work with that are 60 something that have been in the business for years, mm-hmm. and they still call it Elvis to this yep. day.
So 15 or so years ago, well, no, it was maybe like 17 years ago when I first started hanging out in TV trucks, that was, you know, I can't even imagine what the setup is now for studios as well as truck shows. But I do know that Elvis used to be the standard, but then, mm-hmm. you know, Everts and Dreamcatcher and some others came along and they're still great. But shout out to the replay operators around yeah. the world.
The one thing about our field that a lot of people don't know is that it's very male dominated. Mm-hmm. So when you see a woman who's a EVS operator, we are literally like 1 in 20 when mm-hmm. you see us.
Mm. Same as like camera shaders. People, mm-hmm. well, honestly, a lot of those positions around the truck, you just don't. Yeah. One is how many people are even know that those roles exist. And two, how many would even want to do that? It's just like camera operator. We talked about on one of the last episodes, Corinne and I were interviewing, is like there are not many women handheld or camera operators mm-hmm. in the live production space. So shout out to you for being one of the 20 or
you.
One out of 20.
Hey, it's honestly, like I said, I'd never pictured myself doing this job at all. Like mm-hmm. in my head, I thought I was going to be doing something totally different, but to have such a niche job is so interesting when people don't even know what you're doing. But when you tell them what you do, they're like, oh my God, that's so cool. But then also people don't understand how stressful the job is. The pressure of being a replay operator. Mm-hmm. We are literally, I would basically say like the last line of defense next to the TD to let the producer know what's happening, because yeah. he can't see every camera that's happening, but I have every camera in front of me to let him know what's happening. And as far as like graphics, or if we see people when it comes down to celebrities on site, we're the mm-hmm. people usually letting them know who those people are or letting them know if something's wrong. So when I tell people what my job is, they're like, oh my God, that's cool. But like I said, if you can understand the pressure, then that's a different situation. But if you can't handle it, that's not the job for you.
Yeah. So going back to your college days at Auburn, Auburn has been known for a while for good everything in the post-production, live production, all that space, right? When you got your opportunity to, you know, work a game, was Auburn kind of like some of these other schools where you get a chance to kind of, you know, each game do something different and you kind of locked in on replay? Or was it just that one time you killed it and then you just kept like kind of honing your skills in the replay world?
It was like that at first for me to be able to kind of ping to different spots. So sometimes I would grip, sometimes I would work camera. And I think there was like only one game where I did handheld and my shoulders was like, nah, you can't do this again. So I mainly work like the big Hitachi cameras. But like I said, once I got in that chair, because a lot of people didn't want to do replay and they couldn't understand the stress of it, then I just got crewed on that a lot more. And so that became my primary duty. Even though I was still able to bounce around to those other three positions if it was possible. Now, the one thing with Auburn that I really love is what you mentioned, that we were able to do different kinds of sports. So I've done gymnastics, I've done soccer, I even did equestrian, I've done baseball, I've done football, basketball, like I've did even swimming. Like we've did so many sports that allows you to get the exposure that you need when you're hopping out in the field, because if you didn't have exposure to these sports, you don't even know the basics. And so there are people that I know who have never worked on a sport that can't get an opportunity because they've never done it. And so to have that exposure in college is definitely, and it has been beneficial even to this day.
What sport was your first replay opportunity in?
Basketball.
Which is high-powered.
Basketball.
Yeah. It's it's fast. You have to be on it. Like there are no breaks. It's just like people may not, you know, you always see on TV like or in person, like, oh, who's running the score? Right. I remember when I was a student, I was the, and this is an old term as well, bug operator running the score for an entity that does not exist anymore, which was CSS.
Also, don't say that it's an old term. People still use
People
term.
People still use Elvis. So,
yeah. It's still so. Well, bug, and all of that, it's not an old term. It's still used.
Okay.
So don't date yourself that much. You're not that old.
Oh, no. We're not that old. I appreciate that
because that's like about the third time you have done that, Darius.
Hey.
Mentioning age.
I'm not the oldest on here. But no, like, I remember running the score for CSS, and it was the most difficult thing that I've ever like had to do because it was like, man, and this, their truck was old. Like we're talking about age and stuff, but CSS used to run on the oldest trucks that you could possibly ever be. And they called them bread trucks because they basically looked like they were delivering bread. They were very small. You were in a confined space. It was, but that was tough. And I was like, I'm never doing this again. Cause it was like, who is running the score?
I saw graphics one time. One, I barely can spell as it is. So I'm not trying to type nobody's name, nobody's fonts. I'm good. All you're going to get is a messed up EVS name, but you know exactly what it is because it may have an A or I in it. Just the extra letter, but it's going to say what it's. And at least I can go back and change it and nobody else will see it.
So to that point is like when you're doing replay, how are you going through? Because that's a lot of labeling as well. I remember I used to go get a lot of melts from the truck and they would go through like all of this nomenclature. Oh, that's a hard word. For replay. So how are you all coming up with that naming convention?
Okay, so prior to, depending on what sport, we kind of already have what we want to call it. And so, like, even being at Warner Brothers and Turner, it's kind of the same way as well. So for basketball, we normally go with whatever the team name is. So the Lakers will put L. Some people put LAL in Tri-Code, depending on what you're doing. I know specifically for baseball, they use Tri-Code. But most of the time, it just depends on what the team name is. Now, if the team name is the same and has the first letter, then we just go with the city. And then if it's the city, then we'll try to switch depending on if it's the mascot. And so mainly it's like, say, for instance, we'll do Lakers. We'll say L. Then the team player's number will say 10. And then whatever the description is for what's happening. But we keep it very short because on EVS, you only have 12 characters. Unlike Dreamcatcher, you have, I think, 24 where you can type a little bit more. But we do it super short. So we say 3P for three-pointer. If we say layup, some people put L-A-Y. Some people use L-U. I think I use L-U because it's shorter and it's easier. Assists, you put A-S-S or A-S or N-1. I just usually use A-N and then 1. But for the most part, just try to keep it as short and concise. As far as when it comes down to doing it as quickly as you possibly can, it just comes with reps. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you just go back and label if you can, especially if they're going tit for tat. I just clip off as much as I can. And then usually we have a 2 minute and 30 second break. So I usually try to do it within 30 seconds to a minute in our break to make sure I'm caught up. Because if I'm the person doing the melting and archiving, I want to make sure that everything is right and they can get it as quickly as they possibly can. But for the most part, it takes reps to get there and type as fast as you can to be able to get that. Because as soon as you're clipping it off, I usually just try to see who's making the shot and at least put a number on it. And I'll go back and normally change up if they did a layup or a three-pointer or a J. Because sometimes you can't tell depending on what camera angle you have.
Do you have a favorite story from the truck or something that has gone like totally sideways that you had to save in live TV?
I can tell you a story where I cried because I was so frantic at trying to find a different angle that I look past something so quickly. So for one, I will say I've never actually worked specifically on a truck. Now, when I worked at ESPN, they did not like sending operators out to trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is that we were promised that we were going to be able to get those opportunities, but that never happened. For some people, they got that opportunity if they had been there for like 10 years. For us, I was just like, okay, well, if I'm there for 5 years, at least I have one time. So my thing is just like, if they, we had producers who would do games that were close by, like in Boston or New York, we would take it upon ourselves to be able to have those opportunities. They would never just set it up for us. As far as with Warner Brothers, they give you opportunities to travel and do truck games. I just started last year, so I've been here for basically a year now. And if I say, hey, I want to go observe something that's in the area, say, for instance, a Falcons game or like a Hawks game, they'll be like, yeah, sure, especially if I'm not working. They'll give me the opportunity to observe. As far as travel, there are people who get the opportunity to travel, too, especially when it comes down to the full time employees. So that's one thing. As far as the story of something that traumatically happened, it's kind of like shaped my career. We were doing a baseball game at Auburn, and I was first chair, which is basically packager. And it was my friend Alicia who was my second hand. And
so you're both two replays.
Yes. So we had two replay operators, and then we had a logger. Mm-hmm. So me and Alicia were sitting on the same bench, and our logger, Sam, she was sitting in the other control room logging. And our front bench, our director was Michael at the time. And the play was that Tennessee and Kentucky. One of the Tennessee players had ended up looking like he hit a home run, but we knew that he didn't hit a home run. We knew the ball was foul. But on the field, the umpires called it a home run. And so they were like, well, let's check with replay to see if the ball was foul or was it a home run. We're cycling through all the cameras, and I'm trying, and like, people don't understand. When things like that happen, people are yelling at you to get it as quickly as you can. So I'm like trying to look at all the camera angles, but I also have Michael and the producer in my ear saying, do we have it? Do we have it? Did you see it? Did you have it? As quickly. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, I'm trying to think. I can't see if you keep talking to me. And so I looked through all the angles because we had assigned angles. I think each of us had four cameras per person. And I looked through all my angles and I was like, I don't see it. I don't have it. But this is the angle that I can show you where the ball clearly goes foul. So the umpire sees that angle and he was just like, oh, it's a home run. So I'm like, okay, cool. I did my job. Sam comes out of nowhere, probably like 10 minutes later, and was like, hey, I think you should look at this. And something in my gut just told me to just not even look at it and to just continue the game. But me being myself, I want to see what it is. So I pulled up the angle and you can clearly see the ball past the foul pole. And all I hear is, are you kidding me? And Michael's like, what in the world? He starts cussing us out from left and right. I was like, you didn't see that? Can I cuss?
Sure.
Oh, he was like, what the fuck are y'all doing? You didn't see that ball? What are you doing? This changes the entire fucking game. The ERA, rankings, standings. You guys, I'm so disappointed. And I'm sitting here like, he thought we did it.
That's a real life stuff. Yeah.
This is hilarious.
That is so real. I'm like triggered. Oh
my God, girl, I'm like, my anxiety right now.
In a situation like that, you have not worked in live production.
You have not worked in sports. If you're not, you're in tears crying over whatever camera. EBS,
but live is so, like, I remember being a student working in the control room, and that is like, you just have to build some type of wall around, because it is a high pressure situation. And you know, I know that, you know, in today's age it's not acceptable, but at the same time,
sometimes you get those people.
Okay, but hold up, I have a question, because mm-hmm. I feel like as a woman, I was told, like, don't let anybody see you cry ever. And I cry every day. I cry. So I'm curious, in that moment, what was going through your head, or if the tears just kept rolling, or if you were like almost internalized, like, oh no, like this is now defining me. Like, how did you go over it? Because you said you need to grow thick skin. So I'm curious what your take was in that moment.
So one, luckily, the one reason that I love WEP so much was because we all developed really good friendships with outside of the control room. So luckily, me and Michael were actually friends outside of that control room. So what he was saying, I wasn't taking personally.
Right.
However, him being disappointed in me for me not to do my job, I think that's what hurt my feelings.
That's what it was. Okay. That makes sense though.
It's a team effort. Mm-hmm. Like, it truly, control room, I feel like, more so than post-production. And post-production is a team effort as well. But with live production, you are really reliant on everybody else's role. The producers communicating with yourself in replay teams, right? Like TD, you said,
there are more
people communicating, right? The TD
to doing their jobs, right? So I can do my job, right? Absolutely. It's literally like a chain reaction.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's, I mean, I while I hate that you experienced that, I also love that you experienced it.
I love our day. I will say that. But I will say I felt disappointed. But afterwards, like while the game was going, because we were almost out of the game by that point. But I was very like, damn, Janice, like you could have. Dang, girl. And I looked at Alicia, and Alicia's looking at me, and she's like all sad, too. And so, like, after the game, me and him went to go step outside and talk. And then that's when I cried. Because I didn't want to cry in front of everybody, but it's just like, dang, you know. But I will say, I wish we would take off the stigma of people being emotional, because things happen. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, people have feelings. You're not a robot. So if you're disappointed that something happens, or even if you're getting yelled at, you know, there are ways to be like, yo, don't talk to me like that. Like, which I had to learn, like, going in my career, that some producers, like, they would say certain things. And I would be snippy back, because it's just like, dude, like, I'm helping you out, you know? I'm trying to get what you're asking for. And if you ask for something that you need 10 seconds later, no, I'm not going to give it to you, because we don't have time for that. Like, it just depends on what it is. And so even we had a producer... This is another story. We were doing football, and our red hat ended up getting on, like, didn't tell the teams to come out at the proper time. So we're still in commercial break. I think we have like a minute left into commercials, and we see the teams about to start playing. And so the producer's like cussing everybody out, like, what the fuck is going on out here? Why are the teams on the field? Da, 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 da. And so we're in the tape room, like, yo, this is, like, he's wild. And so that red hat's talking to him, and he was just like, no, you do not let them on the field. I don't give a fuck if you have to go out there and do snow angels. You do not let them play. And it's just like, you can talk to somebody with some grace and respect. And it got to a point where after the season, like, it was like one game, he was so bad that the tape room was like, yeah, no, we have to have a conversation with you. So it got to a point where, at least with him at ESPN, we were just like, hey, your language and the way that you talk to, like, you talk to people, you can't do this. That's disrespectful. And even now, like, at Warner Brothers, there are a couple of people, you know, they'll go off occasionally because, you know, that's what they're used to. But people, like I said, we're individuals. You're not going to talk to me any kind of way. And then even afterwards, like, I expect an apology. I had a situation where that happened, and the guy, luckily, he apologized afterwards, because I was going to have a conversation with him regardless. My thing is, especially if I'm going to see you the next day, we're going to talk about what happened. You're not about to talk to me crazy. Or even at the post-mortem when we're done, I'll be like, hey, my bad. Like, if I did something wrong, I say, you know what? My bad. X, Y, and Z happened. Or I'll be like, hey, I know you was yelling at me, but this is what happened. And they'd be like, oh, yeah. Okay, my bad. I understand. There was a lot going on. Yeah. I just want you to let you know that you yelled at me for helping you out.
It is a lot that goes on in that room and in those trucks. And, you know, and some people, like, if you have never been in there and you walk in and you notice this, you're like, oh, my God, this is the most toxic thing ever.
But it really,
like,
is.
It's very, like, it probably seems like it lasts for, like, a long time, but most times it's 30 seconds or less. Yeah. Like a lot of times it is very short lived, but if you, you know,
sometimes you have those people that like to hold it on throughout the entire show. And I just be like, me. Bro, like, come on.
I'm holding on. I'm hanging on too.
Holding on to it does not make the production better. You just make the other person feel like shit. And they can't even give you the best that they can give you afterwards because they know that you can continue to harp on.
Yeah.
See, but I think you've learned, right, mm-hmm. when to get those moments in. Yep. And there's a learning process that I think has to happen, right, but that comes naturally with experience. And like, to your point, we are all so different. I like I said, I'm so emotional. Like, I cry all the time at the, like, stupidest things and the best things and the worst things, right? But I think what I'm hearing from you is that, like, how important assertiveness is. And I feel like you are very assertive. And I think you have to be in your role, both in what you're doing as a replay operator, but also right in the physical, right? Being aware of what's going on in the game, but yeah. also assertive to what's happening with your producers and the rest of your colleagues. One of the things that I'm very curious about is, right, you're seeing all these different angles happening at the same time. How do you sell an angle? Because I feel like so much of the creative industry is selling your ideas, selling what, you know, you're putting down.
Well, the one thing is you have to understand what cameras you have and what cameras other people have. And not only that, learning in the industry, slow-mo is going to chomp everything. So if somebody has a slow-mo angle of a file, they're normally going to probably 10 times out of 10 are going to go to that angle first. Now, if it's like a crazy dunk and I have like the ATRs, which are the above the rims, or a handheld, or like, let's just say mid-court handheld versus the ATRs, I will not sell mid-court because it could be cool. Like, if it's the best angle to see this, then yes. But I will probably sell the mid-court first before I sell the ATR because the ATR doesn't show you everything. We as people want to see the action happen in our face. And doing an overhead perspective is just like icing on the cake. It doesn't really give you everything. So I'm looking at what do other people have who I know has a slow-mo. And if the person who has a slow-mo is selling, I'm not going to sell what I have because they have the missing. But if there is action coming directly at me, then I will sell my angle as much as I possibly can and as hard as I can because I believe that this is the best angle. Like, you just kind of have to have discernment on what you have and what other people have. And then kind of open up your mind to being like, okay, well, I have two handhelds. Who has a better angle out of all of these things? Is it going to be the slash? Is it going to be camera two? Is it going to be game? Like, you have to kind of like also be the producer of what you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
So we are the producer's eyes at the end of the day when it comes down to those things. So that's kind of like how I base me selling. I'll sell what I have if it's something okay. But if they basically say, hey, no, I want to go to this, I'm not going to sell it again because I'm like, all right, cool. Like, you already kind of know where you want. So currently we do center court game at Warner Brothers, and we all have two angles per person. I usually would have, if I'm packaging, I'll have tight and then I'll have the left ATR. You have another person who has the handhelds and the right ATR, and then you have the other person who has slashes if that's possible. If there is like more action where they want to see play by play, I'll sell camera two because camera two usually you can see who's passing the ball to who. I wouldn't normally sell a low angle for that particular reason. I'll sell my ATR if there's a dunk. That's it. Mm-hmm. Or if there's like a touch at the rim, something like, you know, particular like goaltending, I will sell that. But for the most part, I know that slashes or handhelds are going to get it better. So half the time I just let them sell while I'm packaging. So like I said, it just depends on what angles you have. Because if it's ATRs, I'm not selling it unless it's a dunk. And if they're talking about ball movement, that's it.
I love it. So much good insight.
We talked about, you know, how you got into replay at Auburn. Before then, let's go way, way back. At what point or age did you know that you wanted to do anything in the creative space?
I have always been a creative individual. Did I know it's going to particularly be in television? No. I'm very artsy. I love to paint. I love to create. Like, I love doing craft projects. So I always knew whatever I was going to be doing, it was going to be something crafty or something out of the box. I honestly can sit here and say I could never do a 9-to-5. That's so boring to me. Like, I'm not a 9-to-5 person. And on top of that, like, getting up at 8:30 in the morning, who wants to do that?
Or
like,
7.
That is terrible. That sounds like torture.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. What time do you normally get up? And what is your schedule like?
Yeah, great question.
I normally do not get up until like 10 o'clock, maybe 10:30.
Jealous.
Well, you work late, right?
Yeah, you work late.
Yeah, I work late, which I'm okay with that now. Like before, when I was in my 20s, I was like, oh my God, I don't have a life because I'm working late. But also, a lot of crazy stuff happens at night. And half the time, I don't want to be there. Mm-hmm. So now with this schedule, because at ESPN, it was a totally different situation. Like I was grinding. Here at Warner Brothers, if I have a show that day, I'll get up at 10. I have enough time to run errands if I need to. Sometimes what I've been doing is going to a workout class around like 12. Get home, say for instance, I have to be at work at 3:30. I'll leave my house by 2:30 because Atlanta traffic is like LA traffic at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll leave my house like an hour ahead and then go in and do my show until 12, maybe, depending. Sometimes it's like 3 to 10. Sometimes, depending on what it is, I come in at 5:30. Even on the weekends now, like, I don't have to work every weekend because there are other people working other shows. But I still have a life, so I can still do that. Or if I want to do a lunch with my family or go run errands and walk my dogs, like, I can at least have my slow mornings now. And then worried about work at night and then come home and go to sleep. And I love that because if I do want to go out, I can still go out and get a drink. Like I usually would get off work like around 11:30, 12 o'clock. The club's still popping, bars are still popping. So if I still want to go outside, then I can. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, like I just be wanting to go home because people are crazy.
Absolutely. Especially in Atlanta. So you work in a place where, you know, you get to experience a lot of famous people, a lot of like stardom, even if you're like behind the scenes. Do you ever get starstruck when you actually do encounter some of these people that you may have never even thought that you would work with, or is there not the case for you?
They have to be particular people. Like, I've also grown to the point where if it's not Viola Davis, Beyonce, and Rihanna, look. Okay, cool. It's
all right.
Great to meet you. Like, if it ain't Cheryl Lee Ralph, like the greats, like if it ain't like top tier people, then I'm like, okay, whatever. So it's interesting working with celebrities because it's just like you see them and you can be star-studded if you want to. But at the same time, I'm like, they're people too. They're like, I have to tell people that all the time. Like, they are normal people. You do not know what they do with that off the court. They just happen to have a talent that they hone very well, which got them to where they are. They are people, okay? So if I see somebody and I meet somebody, I'm like, oh my God, it's so nice to meet you, you know? But half the time, like, I don't know. I'm just not, I think that's probably why I'm not starstruck. It's because we work with industry. Like, we work in industry of people that are famous. And so if I see them, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, for instance, we had Diana Taurasi come to the LA like studio. Now, my thing is, Diana Taurasi's the GOAT. That was one person I wanted to see. If I saw anybody, I would have been like Taurasi, right? But then Jason Tatum happened to come up in here. And then we had all these other people. And I'm like, oh, they're here. Okay, cool.
They're normal people. For the most part. But,
Like I said, you have to be like the top of your career for me to be like, oh my God, like I have to meet these people. Like they are crazy. Like, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't get starstruck like that.
And they respect it more when you're not like
crazy.
Just overly like making this a thing. But you know, it is cool, like in this field. Like, depending on where you are, like, even if you work at a college, like, there's always going to be, you know, some older athletes or, you know, people come to the game, you know, at Texas, I would be standing, you know, a foot away from Matthew McConaughey or, you know, maybe a Kevin Durant comes to a game or like it's all of these people. And you're just like, okay, cool.
Yeah, we did. So Atlanta had this like bit on the yard kind of thing. I can't remember the specific title. But it was like us working out at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which in my head, I was like, that's cool in general. Like, this is great. But I think the entire thing, I think Shamar Moore or Shamar Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think he was like a partner or in charge of it. And so at the end, like we saw him walking around, you know, and my friend, she was like, oh, my God, that's him. And I was just like, oh, OK, cool. I was just like, he looked better in person than, you know, you see on TV. Like he still looked fine, you know. So she was like, oh, my God, can I get a picture? And so I took her picture. She was like, you want one? I was like, no, I'm good.
Like, wow. She I was like, curved Shamar Moore.
No, it wasn't even that. It was just kidding. Like, it was just like, I told him, it was just like, I said, hey, I said, thank you for putting on this event. I really enjoyed myself. Because luckily you have the ability to do that. Like stuff like that. You being able to do something for the community, that impresses me more. But I don't need to sit here and take a picture with you to say that, oh, he did this. This is so great. Like, that's what you should be doing.
So
if I had that much money, I'd be doing the same thing.
Yeah. So I'm going to take us all back to the 90s. Did you not grow up watching Shamar Moore on, you know, soap operas?
I did. My mom, she loved All My Children. What was it? Young and the Restless. And
General
Days
Hospital.
Around
Life.
Watch
and
all,
I Like to Live. And yeah.
All of it. My thing is, like, I know, I may know you, but am I head over heels for you? No, because you're a person at the end of the day.
In this field, like, knowing that, so not you personally, but, like, does it, like, if your family knows that, oh, you're doing this event or this person is around, like, is that something that they would, like, be head over heels more than you are?
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah. Even when I started working in sports and I started at ESPN, I don't know. I'm going to say this. I don't know why Black people, we do this. But once we know somebody's going to start somewhere and it may be a cool job, we all want free things.
Absolutely.
I would love to.
I think it's just family members. I wouldn't even say it's one subset or group, but.
Man, no. Like, specifically.
Expands the network, and I'm not Black, but I, like,
that's,
people hit me up for Warriors tickets. I don't work there anymore.
Hey, Karina, like, can I get some Warriors tickets? You still
I don't
got
work
connections.
There
right? But it's just like, it's like, oh, my God. Like, I started, they were like, oh, my God. Do you get tickets to free games? Can you send me tickets? Can you get me tickets to this? Oh, can you talk to this person for me? What?
No.
The only thing I see is four walls and a
job.
Dream walker. Thank you. Like, I do not have tickets for everything. And it's cool to, like, be featured in some things or whatever. But no, I don't have those kind of perks. If you want, like, at ESPN, if you want a Disney tickets, I can help you out with some Disney tickets. But other than that, like,
but
I can't
you're not
you
at
anything.
Disney anymore, so.
No, I have to. Like, I think when I left, I had two comp tickets that they allow you to take. So they'll let you take your comp tickets. But I think that's going to expire in like August. So if I don't go within the next few months, if anybody that's going,
I'm going with you. Don't
Karina's,
say less. I love
Karina's
you.
Karina's hopping on my train.
Never mind. I got to take that back. But I would say, yes, that happens all the time. And it's low key annoying because half the time it's like, you're not even checking up with me on a regular to even ask how I'm doing. You're just asking, can I get you something? And it's just like, for what? Why are you in my face? Why are you talking to me? Why are you on my phone? Get off my phone. Like, I will say, even for like some of the projects, especially like my parents, my mom and my stepdad, when I tell them I'm doing something, they don't pay attention. Like, for instance, I did Unrivaled, right? I was just telling my mom, I was like, oh my God, I'm so proud. I was like, we just finished the season. It was so great. I did my rollout, da 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 da. And so she was like, oh, yeah, I saw something about that on GMA this morning. And I was like, you didn't watch the game? She was like, no. And I was like, OK. And so I just showed her like the because I ended up getting my B-roll sent to me. So I was just like, yeah, this is what I did on air. She was like, oh my God, congratulations. And I was like, thanks. That's it.
I think that's a parent thing. It's like, I don't know if anyone's parents actually know what they did unless they're Nepo babies, right? But I want to talk about Unrivaled because it is 3-on-3, brand new pro women's sports league, basketball league. And you got to be part of the inaugural like debut of all of it. What was that experience like? And what was your favorite part of being part of that process?
So going back to Auburn days, the director for Unrivaled is Morgan. Morgan, I think her last name's Thomas now, is the director. She is a web product as well. So luckily when I got my job at Warner Brothers, she was like one of the main people I was talking to because we were just like, she was like, I'm going to get you in the door. We're going to figure this out.
Okay. We're going to talk about that too in a second.
Yeah. But she was the director and she was our producer. A few months before Morgan hit me up, she was like, hey, she's like, we're doing women's basketball because I used to work with WNBA. She was like, do you want to be on it or whatever? And I was like, oh my God, heck yeah. Like, I love the WNBA. She was like, okay, cool. I'll put your name in the pool. So when the season started, I found out that I was on it and I was like, yay. And then I walked in and like one of our more veteran operators, he was like, yeah, so you're going to be the lead for this project. And I was like, oh.
A lead. Like a lead.
Yeah. He was like the main EBS op. Like, so normally, like I said, you have two seats. You have the person who's primary and then you have like secondary op. He was like, yeah, you're going to be lead. Yeah, right. So I was just like, oh, snap. Okay, cool. So luckily, throughout the process, I was the lead, but he kind of helped me out with like knowing how Morgan, you know, directs and like what TNT, how they run their things when it comes down to sports and shows. So he was just basically like my saving grace, like my helping hand throughout the entire process. I will say the start of something new is always going to be the hardest because you have to like make guidelines for how things go. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how much I can tell y'all. The process was very tedious. And at the beginning, it was a learning curve for sure.
Yeah.
For my side, we did more of studio. We didn't do game. But I did know who the producer was who was doing game. His issue was that they ended up, Unrivaled as a league, ended up just renting out the venue and hired their own workers. So we basically just had to work with them. And then half of them didn't know how to do EBS, let alone speak English, because they're down in Miami. So it was like their native language was Spanish and the director and producer's native language was English. So it was like a barrier for language, for one. So that was learning curve. The EBS operators were not that experienced, so we had to have somebody go down there to teach them how to create melts and to also learn how to clip and everything. So that was a whole thing in itself, just trying to make sure we had access to game material for us to talk about stuff in studio. So once we kind of got that fleshed out and came up with, you know, her rundown of how they wanted to do the show. And so luckily with you having women who are the front line of running the production, they know what women want to see. They know what we want to focus on. And so like, for instance, one thing like fashion, WNBA, when it comes down to fashion and makeup, we're women. We love that kind of thing. But also WNBA players, like they be stunting. So it's just like, let's use this opportunity to highlight these particular players, but also let them be them individual selves by showing their styles. So throughout the show, we would, you know, use their arrivals and talk about what they have on, or we would use it as a segment to talk about what kind of things that they've been doing. Also, this is what they've been wearing. Just, you know, just trying to figure out what the show is going to be. It's always a maneuver trying to figure out what the basics are going to be for your show for the future. And even like our segments, we had a segment where we were talking about the two schools, UConn and Tennessee. We even bought on dogs so that, you know, they can have like a pup tournament. We did like a 3-second like music tournament, just like small stuff. Like I feel like at the beginning stages, you can be a lot more creative with what you want to put on air versus like if you kind of have a set standard. But like I said, learning curve throughout the entire thing. But even the pace of our segments, I don't think people understand how fast our segments are compared to normal shows. Our pregame segments, normal 30 minutes. But when it comes down to halftime and our tweener segments, they're literally almost probably like between 3 minutes to 5 minutes. And people don't really realize that that is a short amount of time, especially if you have these breaks on the back end. We only have that much time to talk about, you know, the highlights of the game or a couple of players, and then we have to get back to site because things move quickly. So the pacing of the show is a lot faster. The games are a lot faster. And just the way we covered the women, like, we've had a couple of mistakes where, you know, some camera guys are used to, you know, panning up and down on, you know, women. We got to a point where we're just like, no, we're not doing that anymore. We're speaking up, making sure that we protect them on our side as well. Even like, you know, some of their outfits can be a little bit too flashy. We'd be like, we're not going to put that on air because we don't want side boob. We don't want to hear this. We don't want to see that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just thinking in a whole different realm of space that I don't think some, you know, when it comes down to men, they would kind of think about that. Mm-hmm. Not be sexist, but just, you know, we think about these things more. As far as like the last final Unrivaled show. We had backups to the backups to the backups to the backups, and the backups almost didn't have backups. Like, it was just really hard because for studio show, we had a 3-camera setup. But also, people don't understand, we ended up using the feed that was on site. So we had the director cutting his cameras while we're using our cameras. And so we're just grabbing warm-ups, trying to make sure we're sticking with continuity because where our set was, you can see the entire floor. And so if we had warm-ups from previous, we couldn't use those warm-ups because a player's not shooting behind them. So just trying to, like, you know, maneuver our way around to make TV look good. And I think we did an amazing job at that. And also, like I said, still being able to have that creativeness to, you know, build rollouts and show people's personalities through what we're doing. And even the players, like, I feel like with the WNBA, you don't get a lot of chance to see these players' personalities, what they like, what they dislike. Luckily, with social media, you can see a lot more of that content, but I don't think it's ever been televised like Unrivaled did. And I love that. Unrivaled tapped into the humanity of the players, even the femininity of the players, to show that they are not just basketball players. They are women. They have families. Mm-hmm. They laugh. They cry. Like, there are people who dedicate their lives to this sport, and you don't even know their name until now. Like, a lot of players didn't really get that much, I will say, clout before then, even though that they were the trendsetters, you know? Like, some people are just now learning about Chelsea Gray, and I'm like, Chelsea Gray been balling in the league for a long time. like it's insane, but I'm loving that they're getting their accolades now. And even though we have new players coming from college into the WNBA, like when it comes down to like Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, yeah, they're getting their shine, but also now, because they have their NIL deals, but now other players are being able to use that as a catalyst for them to make more money as well.
Let me ask you this, since we're talking Unrivaled and fashion and all, in your opinion, you've seen a lot of fits, you've seen them come down those tunnels. Mm-hmm. Who would be your top three best dressed from Unrivaled this season?
It will be Rekia Jackson, Angel Reese, and Brittany Sykes.
That's a solid list.
Yes. Look, Rekia gives you
everything.
Like,
every night.
She gives you everything.
She comes with it.
It can be very classy. It can be edgy. It can be like a Dolly, like, it's everywhere. And then you get to Angel Reese, she gives you, sometimes it's like, okay, I'm just here, but then also she gives you very couture. She brings her little Birkin bag, like, she gives you high class. And then you got Brittany Sykes, she gives you the more edgy, more I would say masculine side of like streetwear. And I just love seeing the varieties of how people dress and like their personalities. Like, you would not get that in the regular WNBA for sure.
Well, I mean, some of that you get, because I mean, it also depends for the season what the team is doing, right? So, like, if you look at a team like the Aces, they highlight that every game. So when they're Kelsey Plum was on the team, and they always highlighted, okay, well, what is Asia going to wear today? Like, is she coming in sweats to give you 40, or is she going to, you know, dress it up? But I think that that's one of the W actually influenced the NBA to start leaning more into that, because, you know, maybe 10 years ago you had like Russell Westbrook who would do that. But now it's one of those things where it's like, hey, every night somebody's got to, you know, wear something, you know, to catch the attention of, you know, somebody.
I feel like I would say 5 years. For the past 5 years, the WNBA has been playing catch up when it comes down to that kind of content. I would say when I started doing WNBA, like back in 2018, they didn't know what to do. They were trying to figure out, how do we rebrand to make our league more likable, to make our content, one, more accessible, but also how do people engage with us a lot more versus what they've been doing? And so we told them, which is crazy because we ended up having a meeting with them. And me, Alicia, we sat there and we were just like, y'all should tap into these brands, tap into Sephora, tap into what they're wearing, tap into all these things. Like, you guys are not tapping into femininity. Y'all are just trying to make them basketball players, and they are people. So like, tap into those things, tap into them being moms and like being women, like do that. And so I think after that conversation, we started to see a change. They kind of thought that about that, and I was like, okay, cool. And I'm pretty sure they did focus groups everywhere else. But as replay operators who are actually doing your sport, like, listen to what we're saying. We know what people want to see. And so from then on, that's when you started seeing the trickle of what they're wearing and all this other stuff. And also, like I said, just trying to make sure that we're shooting them in the proper light, because if somebody has like a short dress on, like, we can't use stuff like that. But yeah, just trying to tap into the femininity of the woman of the WNBA. And so I would say that they finally was like, okay, we should start doing things that make us likable, because that's kind of what it was. And so luckily they did take that lead from the NBA of like showing what players are wearing, and also understanding that these women are not just basketball players, they're women. So like, now a lot of people didn't know about Rekia Jackson beforehand, but since she's been showing up, everybody's like, oh, she's one of the baddies. She's one of the baddies, and she can ball. Like, it was like her, she got ejected, Angel got ejected, and who else? I forgot who else got ejected, but they called it baddie jail. And so they had put them all together. It was like, the baddies are in jail. They've been rejected. And I was just like, yeah, like, this is fun. This is funny. Like, tap into the young culture. We as older women, we understand that, you know, the WNBA is not going to be the same, you know, but at least make it enjoyable for everybody. And doing that, to tap into their womanhood and their humanity and like them being moms and the femininity, like, it just makes it even better for us to be able to enjoy watching them play.
Yeah. And the W has a lot of more catching up to do. And I think Unrivaled has kind of unearthed some of that, of like how you can tap into, you know, more brand opportunities, not just for one or two, but for, you know, to have the Sephora lounge, or, you know, to have all of these different things. So what would be the biggest thing that you would like to see them translate from Unrivaled to the W?
Ooh, the number one thing I would say is, give the players what they need to be successful basketball players, whether it be them saying, hey, we need a private charter flight for us to go back and forth the games. Give them that. They deserve that. They didn't work their entire career for them to not have transportation and for them to have to, which is not a bad thing, take coach. But like, give them the privacy that they are owed. Give them the ability to have maternity leave without there being any discrepancy. Give them the ability to have nannies that watch their children while they're in game. And then not only that, like half the nannies that were working there weren't like on, like some of them weren't personal nannies, but at least have people on staff that can be able to watch the children while they're in practice and doing all these things. Like cater more to your players than just, hey, show up, play basketball and go home. Like, no, they should have their own locker rooms. They should have their own facilities because they are owed this. Like if I was a basketball player and you're telling me that my entire life, I got to this moment and I have to share a facility with the YMCA or something. What are we doing? That's crazy to me. But like, give them that. Give them what they are owed. And so like, I know currently coming up, the WNBA and the Players Association for the WNBA, they're going to be in talks about what's going to happen. And if the players aren't happy with their negotiations, there may be a lockout. I've seen that on social media from a different, a lot of different WNBA players who are willing to, you know, sit out a season if they don't get what they're owed. And honestly, I'm not mad at it. I would rather them get what they're owed, like Unrivaled was able to put on for their players, and let them be the best basketball players that they can be. They do it for NBA players. They can definitely do it for WNBA players, and also tap into these brand deals and the people that want to invest in the WNBA. Like, it's really that simple. I just think that they're just trying to keep the reins on what they think is the WNBA. Oh, this is the, because you know, some people just think, oh, this is the WNBA. Yeah. It has to be classy. It has to be this. Yeah. Come on now. Like, yeah. It does not have to be that way. We all have.
Well,
like,
it can be that and, right? It doesn't have to be an either or.
It can still be classy, but at the same time, it can still be fun.
It can be edgy. It can be.
Yeah, like, it can be edgy. People think that. Yeah. It's so crazy because, like, people think that WNBA is, like, so soft. Oh, they're women. They shouldn't be fighting. They shouldn't be. Da, 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 da. They shouldn't be fouling so hard. They play harder than the men nowadays.
Bring up the
tape. I need people to watch. The refs let them girls play. Yes. And I love it. I love it.
Yeah. The people who are saying they haven't watched, like, from the earlier days of the W. Like, the W has always had.
They've been scrapping since day one.
Absolutely.
Diana Taurasi had been punching people left and right. Like, y'all are not paying attention. Her, Brittany Griner, Sue Bird, when Sue Bird was in her prime, like for real, stop playing with them.
Yeah. And fundamentally, we'll talk about it is
being so hard. Angel Reese is playing just like they were playing back in the day.
Absolutely. All right. So, Janice, I'm going to cue this up while she's pulling up the clock. So, we like to play a little fun game around here. We make it up on the spot. Okay. Not every game is the same, but you do have 30 seconds for this. Game. Okay. So we're going to give you a topic. You name as many things within 30 seconds that is included. Karina, do you have any rules that you want to go with, or do we just make this up?
No rules. There's no rules. It's any item, product, thing that you use in your day-to-day life.
Okay.
Or your role. Ready, get set, go.
Hold up, wait. Hold up.
No, we've never had anyone that said, hold on, wait. We can't start yet.
Hold it back. Hold up. What was the question?
Oh, she's playing a replay. She just hit a replay on us to do a rollback.
Just making it slow-mo.
Wait, okay, so.
Yep, we're going to roll it back. We're going to roll it back. Roll it back 10 seconds. 30 seconds.
Can you do halftime, Karina? Okay. So she can be slow-mo.
Yeah, I'm
at TV 50%. Timeout. We got the red hat over there. That's Justin.
Give me 2:30. Hold up.
All right.
Okay.
So what question do you have before we get started?
Okay. So what was the question?
All right. So you get 30 seconds to name as many items, topics, products that you take with you or need every day in your role.
In your day-to-day work.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
In 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, water bottle, backpack, snacks, headset, paper, pen, chapstick, perfume, because sometimes people be funky. What else? Tape, white out highlighters, yourself, put on clothes, hairbrush, hair clips, first aid kit, a mini one, Tylenol, because sometimes you get headaches. As far as EBS, you got the EBS.
17. Wow.
That's
no
impressive.
One has ever gotten over 15, first of all.
Wait a minute. We need to rewind on this emergency kit. You like get geared up for going to work.
Hey, she's like, listen, those buttons are sharp.
Like that. Some days it feels like you're going to war.
Well, okay. This is why I say these things. My thing is, if I'm sitting down, sometimes I don't have a chance to get up. So if I cut my finger or have a paper cut on something, or if I need Tylenol because I have a headache, I need everything right there because I may not be able to get up for like the next hour. So if I need water, if I need snacks, I need everything to be in reaching distance. If I need a highlighter, gum, all of that needs to be in reaching distance. The, like I said, first aid kit is like, if somebody accidentally cuts themselves, or you may need a safety pin. What if like your blob bust open or something? Like you need like small things. You never know. Even trying to put some cables together. If you need a, like, I'm telling you,
if the cables break.
No, it's real. I feel like we don't talk about this, that when it comes to game time, we need to prepare almost the same way that athletes do in some instances. Like you have to be ready because like you can't step away. And the moments that you do have to step away can be really limited.
Especially in live, because what people don't understand is like, while you're in commercial, you barely have to, like you're catching up. Like you're putting these, oh, what plays did I miss? Like there's barely time to rush to the bathroom.
They need, like, what if they're saying, okay, we're coming back with these highlights. We need the segment. Oh, we need Chelsea Gray's 3 points. We need three of those. Okay, well, now I have 2 minutes and 30 seconds to make sure that I can find three clips of her making 3-pointers. Mm-hmm. And I have to put that together and also show talent to make sure that they like it. Yeah, just because we're in a commercial break doesn't mean we all have breaks.
Yeah.
We are working straight through. Especially at football season, 4 hours straight on air. Like we don't have time to get up all the time. It's like sometimes halftime, you'll get up, you go to the bathroom, may be able to grab a snack, but you're back in a chair making sure you have your playlist for whatever you're talking about. I would say going back to what you're saying, Karina, about taking care of yourself in your job. So as a replay operator, a lot of people don't understand that it is very taxing. Your eyes are open half the time. You don't have time to close your eyes to make sure that they rest. So when I started, I had 20/20. Now I still have 20/20, but I have astigmatism. So like things are starting to get blurry. So I have to wear my glasses for, TV screens and whatnot. But also my optometrist told me that I have a little bit of dry eyes. I don't get to close my eyes as often as I should because my eyes are always open looking at screens. So I have to take care of my eyesight. I have to make sure I'm snacking healthily because you can definitely gain a lot of weight, especially in television, because Crafty is always there with some good stuff. on top of that, like the way we operate, I'm going through it now, like our shoulders are hunched. We're always on our box like this, typing. So when you're home, you have to stretch, or what I've been doing is going to a chiropractor to make sure my spine is back aligned and my neck is aligned, to make sure that that's working properly. You have to make sure your posture is like somewhat okay, because if you're hunched over so many times, you're going to start to develop a hunchback. So you have to be careful with that. And just making sure that there are long hours, so getting enough rest, because if you're not in the best cognitive state, you can miss a lot.
I love that. That is incredible advice. And I think every single one of us listening can take something from that for sure.
Absolutely. So staying on the topic of advice, you're moving into OG stage. Now you've been in the industry for a while. What's some advice that, like you said, on a couple of different angles, right? You don't see many women in EVS, but just also considering that, what advice would you give to the younger aspiring creatives or people who would like to work and may not even know anything about live production of steps to take to get into a position like EVS or replay operating or anything in the lab?
My first advice would be to always be yourself. Don't burn any bridges, and to always keep a positive attitude. I would say working in television, a lot of people run into people who have terrible attitudes, and it just makes the job even harder. So if you can make people laugh, if you have a smile on your face, you can be approachable and have conversations and learn how to confront people with issues and talk to people without it being confrontational, like very like negative. I would say take that. Being able to keep those connections, especially in our field, is the biggest takeaway. You have to network across, it doesn't matter what industry, but people will always remember, oh, she was nice. She had a beautiful smile. She had a great attitude. She was so fun to work with, because it's television. It should be fun. It shouldn't be terrible. It shouldn't be a terrible experience. Yes, stressful, but at the end of the day, it's TV. People ain't gonna remember what happened. On top of that, career-wise, regardless of whatever field you're in, take care of yourself. And I wish I would have told myself that when I was younger. I felt like I pushed myself to my end and burned myself out very quickly because I wanted to prove that I could do my job to the best of my ability. And if I would have took to myself and being like, I know I can do my job, I don't have to stress too much and show people that I know how to do my job all the time, I wish I would have did that. Now I have the capacity to say no to things if I am not in the headspace to do it. Because you want to be in the best headspace for whatever you're doing to give your best. I would say take care of yourself a lot more and work on your mental, meditate, go to therapy, work on your body, stay as fit as you can in some type of capacity, because this job is taxing on the body, whether people know it or not. And to always just have fun. It's TV.
It's entertainment.
That's what I would say.
You mentioned something in there of like, you know, I wish I would have known to do this or that. And I think that in today's, you know, society, we don't teach that part enough of like, you can do the thing without overdoing it. But just because like it, I think we're on extremes, right? It's either like, oh, well, I don't want to do all that. And then we just rush out the door, or I have to go all in 150% capacity, always on, always, you know, eyes wide open. How do you, like, when did you get to that point to where you figured out like the give and take or the balance of that? Because I feel like that's something that is hard to kind of figure out when you can do that and when you have to, like, you know, skip some stuff.
I would say our generation has been taught that we have to grind. That, like, we all know the slogan, grind in our 20s, develop in our 30s, live in our 40s. It is okay to grind in your 20s, but also take care of yourself. And the crazy part is I was actually having this conversation with my therapist last week. I told her, I was just like, when I was in Bristol, I worked myself to the bone to the point where I was so exhausted. COVID was exhausting. We were working 6 or 7 days. Like, think about it, working 6 or 7 days for 10 hours plus would literally, like, it honestly could kill you. But especially with the stress that we are under, like, it's insane. And during that time, like, you can tell it takes a toll. Like, I ended up, it was like March Madness. I only had 6 days off in the month of March. And
been there.
I did so much because I had did the women's finals and I also did men's because I was doing the men's and all this other stuff. It got to a point where I did the women's championship and then they put me on an NBA day the next day. And I had been working women's for 5 days straight. And our boss comes in there and he was like, yeah, you know, clap. He was like clapping. You guys got this, you know, one more day. Da, 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 da. And I'm sitting here drained. And he comes over and he writes a smiley face on one of the monitors in front of me. And I looked at him and I just broke down. I said, I can't. I'm exhausted. I said, after today, I was like, I need a day off. Like, we had a whole conversation. We're 30 minutes to air. I'm supposed to be queuing up stuff. Me and him had a whole conversation. I said, I need you to give me tomorrow off. I've been working constantly. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. And I wish I would have said that earlier. Like, I wish I would have been like, nah, I need at least 2 days off, like, for my mental sake. And if that negates me from getting opportunities, at least I can say that I'm sane and that I'm well rested.
Mm-hmm.
Because my thing is, people don't understand, your body is the only body that you have. If you run your body into the ground, you have nothing. So when I was back then, I was just like, if I just would have taken a few more days to just, you know, took some time to myself, relax. Honestly, on my off days, I would just sleep because I didn't have energy. And I didn't really realize that I needed to take care of myself until I finally left Bristol and moved to the LA office. And I had time where I wasn't working constantly and I had to sit myself down, and I was in this headspace of I'm not doing a lot. I'm not doing anything, because all I see on social media is people doing this, people doing that. I have one friend. He has a clothing line that says nobody here is work harder. Mm-hmm. And honestly, love the clothing line for him, but I hate the slogan because everybody cares about what you do. Right. Everybody cares about what you're doing. And on top of that, why should you work harder? You should be working smarter. And I don't want to have to work myself into the ground just to be like, oh, I have all these things. I would rather have a tiny house where I am happy and I'm in my right mind than to have a mansion and be miserable. Like, at the end of the day. So I learned that I needed to sit down. I needed to rest. I needed to relearn what I like to do, what brings me joy, what brings me peace. And I finally understood what work-life balance was. But not only that, my job allowed me at the time to have that work-life balance. So when I moved back home, because currently I'm trying to save for a house, so I'm back in Atlanta working at Warner Brothers with a different company. They understand work-life balance. They understand that sometimes we have our busy seasons and then sometimes we're just not. But when you're not working, enjoy yourself, because, you know, we're going to be back here again. But even then, I can talk to my supervisor and say, hey, I need a day off. He can be like, all right, cool. We can find somebody else. Because he understands it. Everybody gets it. But until you grind that hard and finally get to a place where it's just like, I'm exhausted, I can't think, I can't function, I can't drive properly. Like, sometimes you got to take a step back and be like, what am I doing wrong? What is my priorities? And your priority, honestly, should be you. Because you can't take care of yourself, you can't do your job properly.
Big facts. Big facts.
Amazing insights there. And I think it's just such so refreshing to hear that reminder, because I think we all need it, no matter what we do, no matter what our roles. So, and I love hearing how passionate you are about it. What's coming up for you? We're recording this in the middle of March, but what are you looking forward to next? What's coming on the radar for this year? What do you got that's that you're looking forward to?
Before I answer that question, I kind of wanted to add to the lessons I've learned or the advice I would give everybody. I would say television is a male-dominated field, and as a woman, specifically a Black woman, we will always, you know, get looked over. But I would say commend that respect. You don't have to be a bitch about it, but always, you know, show a little more assertiveness. And just being a woman in general, like, it's fun being in male-dominated spaces because you make them uncomfortable. And that's my favorite thing to do. You can also teach them things. Like, it's so, like, you learn so much about men by being in male-dominated spaces. But also, at the same time, I don't know.
I'll expand on that. Like what?
I kind of think it's like a frat house. I think of it as a frat house.
I am curious, though. What have you taught? Like, what has come up? Because so I think, like, sometimes men are like, oh, I don't know how to act. And it's like, yo, you don't know how to act any different type of way. Like, why are you being a weirdo?
But like, you do.
It's so funny. We teach them like we are people. We talk about TV shows. Like, I don't know, for me specifically, like, they'll talk about women or whatever. And so they'll be like, oh, did you see what Beyonce had on? Didn't she look good? And I'd be like, yeah, that's a bad bitch. Like, you know, because it's just like, first off, we think people are beautiful too. Also, when it comes down to, you know, some of them may have kids and giving them advice on like, hey, well, if you have a daughter, X, Y, and Z, or they have, like, you know, daughters already, well, don't forget about this. Or like when it comes down to just like reproductive systems, like some people don't understand, oh, like, I guess I don't want to say TMI, but periods and like how that works. Like, you know, we talk about everything in the TV space. And so like having those like candid conversations for them to understand that, or like what clothing is, or like, for instance, like wigs and braids, and having that conversation, it like people get to know each other and you educate them a lot more about who you are. And like I said, just women in general. So, yeah. Make them uncomfortable. Be fun. Be nice. Like, if they disrespect you, be disrespectful back, because that's how they are too to each other. So, you know, I just say play the field the way that you see other people playing it, in certain situations, in certain capacities. Don't be a dick. But what am I working on next? We just closed out Unrivaled. I am shadowing more on hockey, so I'll probably be doing NHL soon. I'm still doing Game Time. What else am I doing? Personally, as a personal project, I've just been trying to be a lot more healthier. And I want to at least run one 5K this year, or walk one 5K. So that's just a personal goal, and like to save money and buy a house. But depending on this economy, we'll see.
In this economy?
In this economy, right? As far as work, just trying to, I told my supervisor, I was like, I'm just trying to put my toes in anything that I possibly can. I was like, if you want to put me on soccer, I've done soccer. If you want to put me on NHL, I haven't done it, but I'll learn it. If you put me on baseball, I've done baseball before. So I think I would say going forward, probably some baseball, some NHL, whatever he puts in front of me, I'm happy to, you know, have a good time and try to figure it out, because I love my job and I love the people I work with.
Yeah.
And hopefully traveling.
Yeah. I love that your willingness to, like, there is no barrier or wall that you put up. Cause sometimes, you know, we've talked about this in other episodes, in every industry, some people limit themselves or don't know how to say, hey, instead of me being the lead, oh, I'm going to go from here to being the lead on NHL. It's like, hey, how about I shadow to see if I even like it, right?
Yeah.
But the willingness, like, have, be open and willing to learn new things, to expand.
Yes.
Because even going back to your time at Auburn, if you hadn't, you know, been open and willing and forthcoming with, hey, like, I've done Dreamcatcher, where would you be, you know, today? Shout out to you. And for all the amazing things that you're doing. And you're a trendsetter.
Thank you.
Trendsetter.
You really are. This has been such an awesome conversation. Thank you for joining us on this pod and being so honest and transparent and inspiring and amazing. And I'm sure so many of us here and listening have seen your work on TV. And now, if they haven't, we got to tune in more to see what you're doing. But thank you so much for joining us on the pod.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad that you reached out. I love having conversations about, you know, what we do and the journeys that people go through and learning different people's positions and whatnot. But yeah, I'm so grateful. I really appreciate you for tapping me so that we can have this amazing conversation.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.